This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here is your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Oh, it's nice.
Welcome back. It is our number two of the Lombardi Line. Hanging out with you guys here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe alongside Mike Palm, the VP of Operations here at the Circa Resort and Casino. And Mike Pritchard, our recent NFL analyst, played nearly a decade in the National Football League. Former first-round pick to the Atlanta Falcons and national champion with the Colorado Buffaloes.
Splitness.
Splitness.
Wow. Sorry, disrespect split. For the texters.
There was three polls and we won two.
Majority rules. Majority rules. National title.
Here we go. The guys that coach the game, they know what's going
on. Yeah. Osborne.
Shout out to the coaches, Paul. Good thing we don't do things that way anymore.
Yeah, like they watch every single game.
A lot of tape. They're looking at a lot of tape.
Pouring me another cup of coffee. We had a fun first hour. We have a fun second hour on deck for you guys. Michael Calabrese, college football betting analyst at the Action Network, will join us in 30 minutes to give us his plays in the bowl games this weekend here. We'll see who he likes also in the CFP semifinals. He does have a bet in both games, so we'll ask him that coming up here in 30 minutes. But let's start, Pritch, with one of your other former teams, the Denver Broncos, because it's been a big week in the Rocky Mountains. Denver, a few weeks ago, looked like they were headed towards the playoffs. Now they have benched Russell Wilson after making that trade a couple years ago, giving him all that money. And Sean Payton and that coaching staff and the organization says no more. We don't want to do it with Russell Wilson. What's kind of your thoughts and what we've heard ever since they came out with the benching and kind of what's gone into that and how we kind of got here?
So many layers. I mean, first of all, Sean Payton talked about a spark. That's where they're moving, making this move. Yep. Well, Russell and whatever spark they had, I mean, that was a full-fledged fire. And when you win six games in a row and get yourself into a playoff picture. I don't know if Payton's trying to imply that this is performance-driven. Russell Wilson, you can use excuses. I know some people have, Mark Schlereth and others have really come out and strongly and said that Russell is not living up to his contract, which he probably isn't. We know that. But I don't think Sean Payton, and certainly the front office, is living up to their situation with their contracts either. The Denver Broncos spent more money and free agency than any other team last year, this past offseason. The results are not representing that. So if you are a coach just trying to implement your own culture, your own environment, trying to create what you want, then you're going to impose your will here. And I think that's what Sean Payton's doing. Like, so look, this happened before I got here with Russell Wilson, and I'm making it all about him and that contract situation, and I'm distracting you from the fact that we've been poor with our assertion in terms of what we've done in the offseason to help build this football team. They jettisoned some high-profile guys because they were bad apples. The front office has done a horrible job of trying to build this team up at the same time trying to figure out if Russell Wilson is going to be your quarterback in the future.
But, Pritch, to defend Payton, I mean, they went to him, what, 3-4 weeks ago and said, if you don't defer the money, you're done? You're not playing
anymore. Well, they threatened him.
They threatened that, yeah. Right? But that wasn't Matt Payton, Sean Payton doing that.
That was the front office. Right.
And
right.
Then when the front office says we're going to follow through on the threat, now it's Payton's job to sell it as it was a decision to give us his best chance to win the spark.
Yep.
And I think he kind of, in a Salah way, you know, you're saying what you're saying, yeah, it's a good point, but I can't replace all five offensive linemen. I can't replace four wide receivers. There's only one position I can replace, and that's what I'm doing, cushioning what the decision was as a commentary on Russell Wilson.
Not only that, but then also distancing yourself from the previous regime in the front office too. There's always, and Michael Lombardi, I'm sure you guys can dive into this and what happens upstairs oftentimes, but clearly the Broncos, it's sad to say this, but they have not been on the same page ever since that Super Bowl 50. From a front office standpoint, it's the reason why John Elway is no longer there. It's the reason why the trust is no longer an ownership situation. They got owners now. So you're trying to, and I think Ellie, our producer, mentioned this, save your desk right now, right?
Yeah, guard the desk.
Guard your desk if you're a front office, if you're Sean Payton, you know, say, look, this is the direction I want to go in. We know you want your own quarterback, Sean. I mean, every head coach wants their own quarterback. And every head coach wants somebody that they can work with. And undressing Russell on the sideline didn't do any favors for you as a coach, because what that did is you just knocked him down so far that his teammates who want to play for him don't no longer respect him because of the way you undressed him in that Lions game. And that right there is, you can't do that as a coach. Name me a head coach that undressed a superstar quarterback like that. Outside of what, McMahon back in the day or Phil Sims and with Parcells. Yep. You don't see a head coach doing that to a player.
Former superstar quarterback. He's a former.
Well,
isn't he? Is he a superstar quarterback?
But he's paid like a superstar quarterback,
but
right?
Is he a superstar
quarterback? Well, I think the perception on that roster for the Broncos is that this guy's a superstar. Yeah. But in our eyes, he's nowhere close to what he was up in Seattle.
But they know that in the team because they've taken away throwing the ball. They want him to run the ball. They've tried to limit his role on that team.
But how is your team going to play for that guy now when your coach just undressed him the way that he did? So now you go to sit him, right? Now you try to get a bump. Yeah. And now you get guys, oh, let's rally behind this young guy, you know, and we're gonna help uplift him. And this just coaches speak is just it's just massaging the same methods that coaches have used in the National Football League or teams have used for National Football League for decades. It's just massaging it for today's NFL, really. So it's no different, but it's unfortunate that it seems that it's all about Russell Wilson. I tell you, I think it's the tip of the iceberg in terms of what's going to happen with this organization, in terms of from a front office standpoint, all the missteps and mistakes that they've made along the way. If they don't get it right, if they don't right the ship or make it look better to the owners in these last two games, there's going to be a lot of changes with that organization.
But not Sean Payton.
No. I mean,
he's there for.
Yeah he's,
but,
he's.
But George Payton, the general manager.
Sure. I mean, George, I think. I mean, that contract he gave Russell when he didn't have to. That's something that's coming to light as well, right? I mean, yeah, I think new GM, you're talking about new scouting. I mean, you're talking about Sean Payton getting everything he wants probably in that organization from an ownership standpoint.
Which if you're Sean Payton, when you took this job, it's like, okay, let's see what happens in year one.
Yeah.
And then by year two, this is my place.
Yeah. Does it become a power struggle and, you know, a situation in which the GM is not the GM before Sean Payton? Absolutely. Absolutely. Those things happen all the time.
And the biggest reason why they did this, at least from my vantage point, was the financials. Like that's why they obviously went for the injury guarantee of the $37 million. And then you go ahead and bench him. It's a little bit similar to Derek Carr with the Raiders last year, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you're moving on from a guy. You know you don't like that contract. You try to do anything and everything you want to. You don't threaten a player, first of all, to do that. You can go to a player and say, look, you know, right now it's not working out. Let's restructure. You can do some stuff like that, maybe some pay cut stuff like that. Peyton Manning took a pay cut from John Elway when he was no longer PFM, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody does that. Everybody restructures or takes a pay if you want that player. Now, if you don't want that player, then you're going to do dirty pool. You're going to threaten them. You're going to bench them. You're certainly going to put out feelers to see if we can trade them, but you're not going to trade that contract. Maybe. Who knows? You might be able to trade the contract. But, you know, right now, everything to everybody else is presented that the Broncos no longer want Russell Wilson.
If they had beaten New England and were better than 50-50 to make the playoffs, would they have made this move?
They wanted to make the move during their win streak, right? I think they've always wanted to move off the contract or adjust the contract. Yeah, that's a great question. Like if they didn't lose to the Texans and they didn't lose to the Patriots, maybe it would be a restructure. Maybe it would be different type of language with Russell Wilson.
Yeah, because like they made this decision and like they're still technically mathematically alive for the playoffs now. Like
what is it's, 8%?
It's, I mean, yeah, it's better than zero, but it's like you're still technically mathematically alive, and they still kind of pulled the trigger on this thing, just saying that hey, we're just completely done.
But
with
the
this.
Stidham bump is real because now they're in a position where they want to show to the ownership that this is going to work.
Yeah. So are they a play this week then for you?
I think they could be. I mean, it's the Chargers one, but then. I mean, the hook, I'm not interested in the hook, though, right? I mean, I got to look at a number. I can't just say, emotionally, I want to sit and bump, but.
honestly, though, like minus 185 on the money line, I don't typically lay that on money line, but I don't think that's the worst thing ever. Mm-hmm. Like, I laid three with Denver when they announced it and the market went down to three. I was like, if Easton Stick beats me, whatever. But even minus 185 with Denver, like... I think the Chargers are completely done. Like, I saw that, yeah, they had the nice dead cat bounce in the first game after Staley got fired, but now this is the week after and it's been Christmas. Like, are those guys really dialed in? Like, I think Denver might put something on them on Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, if you're gonna look at this, like what we just talked about, Sean Payton is invested in making this work and then also asserting himself within his organization with new owners.
Get some positive vibes going into 2024. So maybe we'll get all the plays that he ever wanted to call. We'll get that with Jarrett Stidham coming up on Sunday. Real quick, we got about 60 seconds. This Jair Alexander situation in Green Bay, suspended conduct detrimental to the team, going out there and gate crashing the coin toss before the game last Sunday, which is even crazy to say out loud, but it happened. What's going on in the locker room right now for Green Bay? Like, is this season just completely off the rails, or can they rally behind this?
Off the rails. I mean, no credibility for the floor right now in that locker room. I mean, you're going to take it upon yourself as a player to just walk out on the field. Where's the authority, right? And I said this before, are you interested in calling plays? Are you interested in being a head coach? And LaFleur's got work to do in terms of trying to mature this young roster, or keep the maturity on the roster, or certainly keep everybody, that needs to be on that roster coachable in those situations. So I think it's off the rails, to be honest with you. I think it's just telling on really the environment or lack of culture for that team right now.
Well, now we're going to see it in primetime, Sunday Night Football, to end the new year, to welcome in the new year in Minneapolis there, where it's going to be Jaren Hall, who starts at quarterback for the Minnesota Vikings.
That throws a monkey wrench into this, right?
Yeah, it does.
Makes this a tough handicap. Whew.
If the Packers win out and the Rams lose to the Niners, Packers make the playoffs, by the way.
This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here is your host, Timmy Abbefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Look at a bet smarter than VSiN has the perfect holiday gift for you. Sign up on our holiday special today and get VSiN Pro access to everything we do from now through May 1st for only $79. You sign up today and you get the unlimited access to the daily best bets, the exclusive betting splits, premium analysis, and 24/7 video, plus all our betting guides and best bets for all college bowl games, the Super Bowl, and March Madness. Don't miss out on this limited time offer now. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up on our holiday special. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abbefe, Mike Palm, Mike Pritchard here on a Football Friday. Michael Calabrese of the Action Network College Football Betting Analyst will be joining us in the next segment. He has plays on both semifinal games, the Sugar Bowl and the Rose Bowl. Also has some games, bets in tonight's game in the Cotton Bowl. So we'll get some good stuff from Michael Calabrese. But wanted to get to the CFP semifinals because we haven't even had a chance to kind of talk about this game in depth. And this will be our last show before the games kick off.
Our last show? Monday. Or is it just our last show
before
this year?
Before the CFP.
Okay. We got just another month.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't go that far. It's our last show before the CFP. And I do want to start with this Rose Bowl. Alabama, Michigan, granddaddy of them all. The Wolverines, 2-point favorites. This has kind of bounced back and forth between 1 and 2 for ever since this was announced as the Rose Bowl. The total's at 45. Do you guys have a preferred side in this game here? I know a lot of people have been betting Bama, as Jick Jack said in the first hour, but it seems like, is Michigan that unpopular favorite?
So I took 2 on the opener, because I really believed Alabama would close the favorite. And so I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
I think the worst it'll be is 1, Michigan 1. This game went to 1.5 last weekend and went right back to 2 and then to 1.5. I think if Michigan plays their best game of the year, they obviously could beat Alabama. But I don't think it's lining up and trying to run the football right at them. I think they're going to have to throw the ball. I think they're going to have to spread it out like they did against TCU last year in the semifinal game. And I think their defense is good enough if you can keep Milroe in the pocket to win the game. That being said, I don't think they've had to contend with this kind of speed other than Ohio State. And to me, Ohio State played him dead even, and that was in the Big House. This is a neutral. I give a slight edge to Alabama. I took the 2 thinking I would have a lot of CLV. I'm not. But that's where it stands, and I'm really most of all looking forward to watching the game, Pritch.
Looking forward to watching the game, hands down. The whole buildup and the whole preparation angle, like, for instance, Michigan, they're not complicated in their scheme. And they've simplified the game for their players, and that's why they've executed at a high level all year. Alabama tinkered a little bit, quarterback in, quarterback out. They found a formula. They found what works. And so they're going to work on those similar things too. Like for Michigan to change who they are and to spread them out, I mean, they could implement that and put that in there, maybe a change of pace. But their bread and butter is trying to run the ball and be physical, right? Play action off of that too, and get players for Alabama to overcommit and stuff like that. Bad eyes, all those kind of things. But, you know, mistakes could happen in this game too, long layoff. I'm not thinking that execution is going to be at a slow pace or they're not going to be prepared for this game. Both these teams are going to be highly prepared for this game. I'm trying to look for ways for Michigan to win it. I don't know if there are ways, to be honest with you. I think Alabama is pretty hot right now in how they're playing, how they're executing. Auburn aside, rivalry game aside, Ohio State rivalry game aside. The body of work for Michigan, too, I still question how competitive that conference was this year. And I know SEC was down, certainly. And I just, Alabama against Georgia in that game, they found another level. And, you know, that's Saban. And can Michigan find another level? I don't know, certainly from a laying it standpoint, but the opportunity to get two is probably gone, like Mike was talking about, though. But Alabama looks like the side to me.
Well, there's still some twos out there if you want to go ahead and take two. There's even an off-the-grid place that has 2.5. So maybe there's more Michigan interest that comes in. Maybe I don't think we'll ever get to 3, but you might be able to get up to 2.5 here. And I agree with you about Michigan's schedule. I think the Big Ten was a Mickey Mouse conference this year. Like, I don't think it was good at all. Like, I watched a lot of Michigan football just because, like, those big noon kickoff games were always the best games in that early window. And I watched a lot of Ohio State, and I watched that conference quite a bit, Penn State as well. Was never impressed.
Yeah.
Was never impressed.
I think that's a good win, beating Ohio State.
I mean, Ohio State wasn't that good this year. But it wasn't traditional Ohio State.
And it's a robbery game, too, though. Yeah. I mean,
and you have to beat who you play, but I mean, yeah. look at Nebraska, Minnesota, Indiana, Michigan State. Okay, hang the banner.
Let's be fair. I mean,
we are being fair. We're scrutinizing the schedule. Penn State,
I'm with
come
you.
On.
I'm on Alabama. But here, the game that you're not pointing to because it's not on there is Iowa. They averaged 3.1 yards a play against Iowa. They couldn't run the ball against Iowa. Iowa's ineptitude on offense and the one punt return put them in all the... They did not drive the ball down the field against Iowa. I don't think they can just run up and execute and run the ball against Alabama. Yeah. I think they lose trying to do that.
I think
they're going to have to use, like you say, you're going to have to change Iowa. You're going to have to use some deception here and then hope to get to a lead and let your defense keep Milroe in the pocket and maybe he makes a few mistakes.
Where Alabama probably doesn't have to change. I mean, the way that they're playing, way that they've figured out how to play, they don't have to change. They don't have to deviate.
I understand Ohio State has the two All-American wide receivers, but tight end play and the whole cast of running backs, the speed of the six back of offense, they haven't had to deal with that speed.
No, not at all.
You don't see anything like that in the Big Ten?
No, nothing like that.
Nothing remotely close. And Bama's gone against like the LSU defense, LSU offense, sorry. The LSU defense, that's a whole other thing. But like they face like Jaden Daniels and that dynamic offense. Like they know what it's like to go against different types of offenses. I don't think there's anything remotely close to what Bama does in the Big Ten. So yeah, to me, this is Bama or pass. Like I'll probably have a bet on Bama. You know what? I'll probably have an underdog moneyline parlay. It's called the Coaches Matter parlay.
Yeah.
Give me Saban, give me DeBoer. And that's our national title, in my opinion.
You're anti-Sark.
Believe me, I watched some Sark. Seven-win Sark in Seattle.
In Washington,
I will say, in this game in the Rose Bowl, both these coaches are big fans of each other. You know, Harbaugh and Saban are.
And Harbaugh's a really good coach. I don't want, like, it's not shade, but Saban's a legend. Saban's a legend.
I remember when he took Stanford as a 41-point dog and beat USC out. Yeah. I mean, he's won wherever he's gone.
Yes.
They're bothering him at the Rose, at this Disneyland, asking if he's going to the Chargers. And he talked for 7 minutes and said nothing.
Said the same thing every single time. We just want to dominate the day. We're going to dominate the day. What do you guys think of the Sugar Bowl, though? Because it's 4.5, depending on where you shop. Texas is the favorite. This one, a much more high-scoring affair. 63.5 is the total.
This is a disrespectful line again to Washington.
Yeah. I think it's disrespectful.
There's no respect for this team.
Washington money line.
Yeah, I bet it. I took 4.5 and I bet it money line.
Yeah, I'm not even going to waste the time with the 4.5. No. I'm just going to go money line.
I do think it will be a high scoring game.
Yeah, I'm watching analysts talk about the trenches and how Texas is going to dominate Washington. From a four-letter network, not VSiN. these analysts are just... they're just buying that crap, right? It's like, wait a minute. Do you know Washington's won a national championship before? You right. know that program is storied, right? And how all of a sudden is Texas and those monsters just going to dominate the line of scrimmage? And I just watched Washington here in Vegas take on Oregon, who's built like an SEC team.
And Washington dominated the line.
They dominated the trenches. Yep. I mean, I'm not going to buy into that. It's plus 4 on our screen here. I mean, there's a lot to like and a lot to do with the bet with plus 4 Washington.
Yeah, it's because it's such a high total. Like the points can obviously come into play. I don't want to act like the point spread just doesn't matter at all. I just feel like because I think we're going to get a high scoring game because there are cracks in Washington's defense. Although Washington's defense, and I thought like the Pac-12 game really showed it once it was actually healthy, like they were against Oregon the second time around, much better than what we had seen over the final month of the regular season. Mm-hmm. So I think the Washington defense probably a little bit underrated, but I think that we'll see a high scoring affair to where I think this could be one of those last team with the football sort of wins. And in a close game, where coaching decisions matter, I'm much more confident in Kalen DeBoer than I am Steve Sarkisian. Sark has done a terrific job getting this Texas team to the playoff. They've done a terrific job recruiting, but I still would be a lot more confident in DeBoer than I would Sark.
I go back to your schedule argument against Michigan. They beat one team in the top 21 on the AP poll at Alabama very early in the year, mm-hmm. right? The Big 12 was not deep, and it had a bunch of teams like 25 to 40 in the country.
Yep.
You know, we didn't say it at the time, but they went to Tucson and won. That's a pretty good win.
Yeah,
they won in a terrible rainstorm, which favored Oregon State and Corvallis in that running game, and they won. And I think Penix wasn't healthy for a stretch, and he's healthy now. I think the first drive of the Pac-12 championship game told you all you wanted to know. They spread him out. They converted every play. They held Oregon to only 3 third down conversions in that game, even though the average yards to go was 5. This team makes the plays. They swarmed to the ball on defense. I got them plus 750 as well to win the title.
Would you guys consider at all the left-handed quarterback aspect of this? Because you think about Dylan Gabriel, right? And OU.
He cooked Texas.
And so what is that an example for Texas to learn from, or is that something that they could be susceptible to?
I think they'll be susceptible to it because they ain't seen a team with the receivers that Washington
has. They can't cover this team.
Yeah.
But I like it over as well. I think this game goes over. I think Texas will move the ball as well, but I don't think they can handle Penix in this receiving
game. Husky's money line. I'm going to go ahead and put a little parlay together on the side, but my main bet will be Washington money line. But
you going to parlay with Alabama money line?
I'll do it a little bit.
Yeah.
Both of them. That's what we're going to do here.
Yep.
Happy New Year. All right. Michael Calabrese joins us next year to break down these bowl games on the other side.
This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here is your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page, sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now for only $9.99 at VSiN.com/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line. Mike Pritchard on the far end, Mike Palm in the middle, Femi Abebefe here on the left side of your screen on a Football Friday. And joining us now as we continue our CFP discussion and talk about some of the other bowl games as well, the one and only Michael Calabrese, college football betting analyst over at the Action Network. Michael, hope all is well. Hope the holidays have treated you well. Early Happy New Year wishes to you as well. Let's get right into the Rose Bowl, though, the granddaddy of them all, Alabama against Michigan. Right now, the Wolverines 2-point favorites, total 45. Is there a side that you like in this contest coming up on Monday?
Yeah, I think the wrong team's favored here. I'll go ahead and take the slight plus money, you know, plus 105 on the Crimson Tide. I think this breaks down to the game within the game, and it's all about the Michigan offensive line. How do they look without their best offensive lineman, their guard, out? And can they protect their quarterback, because J.J. McCarthy clearly wasn't right in terms of his legs down the stretch. They're saying that he's going to be able to have that dual threat ability again in this game. Well, that's going to be tested because they haven't done a great job on the edges. And Dallas Turner and Chris Braswell, they're going to come in waves at this Michigan offense and passing situations. And another element of it, too, when you look at some of the advanced stats, Alabama has the huge advantage on the perimeter in Kool-Aid McKinstry and Terrion Arnold. But Michigan's best chance to move the football through the air is in the slot. Roman Wilson has been their ace in the passing game, and this is on Kevin Steele to do something different to basically improve their numbers, because they've been below average by a Power 5 standard in terms of defending the slot this year. If they're able to put the shackles on Wilson and really get after McCarthy, I think Alabama has a chance to win a rock fight here, because make no mistake, I think both of these defenses are legit, and I think Michigan is going to take a little bit of the game plan that they've seen work against Milroe this year, which essentially is do not give up the big throw. He has 24 big time throws this year, and he's made zero interception turnover worthy throws over 20 yards. So he's the best deep ball thrower in the game. That's not lost on the Michigan staff. So they're going to force him to beat them in the intermediate. And if he can't do that, it's going to be one of those games played in the teens, maybe low 20s. But I still like Alabama to be able to get through here and get to the national title game.
Yeah, Mike, I agree with you. I like Alabama too, for a lot of reasons. What you just mentioned, you know, I'm interested in your thoughts, though. Like, if Michigan's going to have to change, because Mike Palm talked about this too, and what they would have to do, all this prep time, and maybe bettors are anticipating that. When you have a quarterback that's thrown on average, what, 22 passes per game, it's like, how much can they skew that? You know what I mean? Like, can they get to 30 passes? Can they get to 35 passes and expect to win? Or are they going to just say, look, we're here because we run the football and because we're tough. And, you know, if we're going to win this game, we're just going to have to be highly efficient that way.
I think Alabama would love it if Michigan threw it 35 times in this game, because that's just added opportunity for their pass rushers to get home. And I really do think it the handicap is as simple as coming down to, is J.J. McCarthy 100% or not? Because he is somebody who, you know, when he was healthy, and particularly last year, he was moving the chains. He was picking up critical third downs with his legs. But if he's not able to do that, I think you're going to see him turn into a pumpkin, basically the way he did down the stretch when they faced quality defenses, because a lot of their stats were inflated by one of the worst, you know, Power 5 conference slates and non-conference slates of the entire, you know, season. So when you look at what he's able to do, he's only a difference maker if he has his legs. So it wouldn't be a bad idea necessarily to keep your money on the sidelines, watch that first drive and see what he has from a physical perspective, and then jump in on a live line.
I want to talk about, Michael, about on New Year's morning in Orlando in the Citrus Bowl. Now, Milton's out. We've seen this line crash down from north of a touchdown to under a touchdown. Obviously, we know about Iowa's defense. They held Michigan to 3.1 yards per play in the Big Ten Championship. Michigan could not run the ball effectively on them. How does Tennessee attack Iowa, and did you make a play in this game?
You know, I think this game is just begging for kind of a fun, exotic alternate line. What I think's interesting is the narrative has always been the same on Kirk Ferentz. He wants to go ahead and win in low scoring games, rely on his defense. Yet he has three bowl wins of 21 points or more in the last 15 years. So when everything goes right for his team, usually they win going away. And I think there's an opportunity to play them on that alternate line, you know, lay 10, lay 13. It may seem crazy for an offense that has struggled as much as they've struggled this year, but I think Tennessee putting a first-time starter up against this Iowa defense, that's a recipe for disaster. Feeding him into the meat grinder of what the Hawkeyes have done on defense with Phil Parker as their DC. I think there's an opportunity in this game to play a big time alternate and go with Iowa to win by, you know, double digits. Because if you do, the payouts are exorbitant. You can get 10, 15, 20 to one on those payouts. And for a game that doesn't have a lot of sex appeal, why not kind of spruce it up a little bit with an exotic play?
You mean an Iowa game is not one that everybody wants to watch? I mean, that's surprising. Are you going to argue with me?
Brian Ferentz might go out in a blaze of glory here.
Yeah. Can't wait for that one. I'll be holding my breath. We're speaking with Michael Calabrese, college football betting analyst over at the Action Network. How about the other semifinal game, the nightcap in New Orleans, the Sugar Bowl between Texas and Washington? Longhorns 4-point favorites, total 63.5.
Once again, another national semifinal. I think the wrong team is favored. I think my power rankings, I have Washington -1. I'm going to take him +150 on the money line. It starts with Steve Sarkisian, who has not been a great bowl coach, 2-3 straight up, 1-4 against the spread. And a lot of this sometimes seems as though fans are complaining or analysts are making excuses, but Washington just wasn't very healthy basically by midway through the season through the end of the year. Now they're 100%. Dylan Johnson back from a foot injury. Their secondary was really banged up, and you saw when they got everyone back, particularly at safety, how much better they looked defensively against Oregon. They shut down the Oregon running game, and they didn't give up explosives for the majority of the game against Bo Nix. And on top of everything else, Zach Durfee, here's a name to keep an eye on. He's freed from NCAA eligibility prison because of the federal lawsuit basically putting a stay, a hold on the NCAA's powers. That brings him into the fold. He's 6'5", 250, and he's getting all this crazy buzz. He was someone who they were hoping they would get on the field this year, had a great spring, and in the bowl practices has been just eating up their offensive line, which, by the way, the Joe Moore award-winning offensive line. So if Washington gets a little bit better in the pass rush in this game, I think that's a huge edge. But additionally, I think what's interesting, the game within the game, is Texas plays quarter coverage just about as much as any power team in the country. And they're going to do it in this game because Jalen McMillan, Polk, you know, Adunze, those are big play wide receivers. So what they want to do, just as they did last year in the Alamo Bowl, they want to say, beat us in the intermediate, keep the chains moving, we're going to take away every big play. Washington was happy to do that last year, and you saw what Penix was able to do in the short game and in the screen game. And what's interesting, Colin Wilson, my colleague at the Action Network, went through and he was looking at very much at a granular level. Texas has one of the lowest pass grades in coverage against hitch routes and against wide receiver screens. So if they are going to force Washington to dink and dunk, I think the Huskies can get it done. And on the flip side, Texas has not fared well against man coverage. Washington's going to play a lot of it in this game. And then once again, another injury in a semifinal that you got to keep an eye on. Is Xavier Worthy fully healthy? They said he's going to go, but this is somebody who had a lower body injury, who was held out in the Big 12 title game. If he's not 100%, I think that man coverage is going to create some opportunities for them to heat up Quinn Ewers in this game and have him make some mistakes. And for that reason, I actually think Washington's the better play here, both schematically and in terms of having a full deck. Whereas you look at Texas, not having Jonathan Brooks, I think is going to rear its head a little bit because he's somebody who could have been a game changer as a Doak Walker semifinalist.
It's a busy weekend for the stadium staff at AT&T in Dallas. We've got the Cotton Bowl tonight and tomorrow Lions at Cowboys. But let's talk about this game this evening. As more and more Buckeyes opt in, we've seen this line sort of run away now. Five, it's touched 5.5 in some spots. Michael, why are you drink-witzing the Missouri Kool-Aid?
All right, let's pump the brakes a little bit on Devin Brown. He wasn't good enough to unseat Kyle McCord, and I think we can all agree he was, you know, at best a B-plus quarterback for Ohio State this year. And now all of a sudden he's going to be a big game changer without Marvin Harrison Jr., who really made their passing game go. I realize they're getting a lot of players opting in. They're getting healthier in this game. But Mizzou was playing as well as any team in the country coming down the stretch. They have a great big three in this game between Cook, Schrader, and Burden III. And defensively, even with Ennis Rakestraw on the sidelines with an injury, this is still a Mizzou defense that can heat you up. They finished 13th in havoc, and they were really stout against the run. So I think, you know, in terms of the different elements of this game and can they slow down Ohio State's offense, I think absolutely. And to take plus 165 on the money, you know, in the market, it's always all the way up to plus 180. I think that's just way too much value to pass up on a Mizzou team that has three wins over ranked opponents and threw a scare into Georgia. So they've proven that the stage is not going to be too big for them here in the Cotton Bowl.
Awesome. So do you have any thoughts on the total there? Or sitting at 51? You think this is a higher scoring game or a little bit lower scoring?
I think, you know, the loss of Rakestraw can't be overstated. I do think Ohio State's going to be able to hit some big plays in the passing game, but Mizzou, I think, is so well balanced that they're going to be able to score. So if I were to take a side in terms of the total, I would go over.
All right, he is Michael Calabrese, college football betting analyst over at the Action Network. Check out all his work on Twitter, or on X, I should say, at East Breeze is where you can find Breeze with an S. Michael, congratulations, man. Appreciate the coming in and giving us some of these plays, and good luck with all the bets.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. That's what I meant to say. I said congratulations instead. But I said, yeah, I guess
congratulations early on plus 180.
Also that. And finishing 2023. We'll finish the show next on the other side. It's the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here's your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
This week, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $150 in bonus bets instantly, and they will get the NBA League Pass for the rest of the season. Download the app and use the promo code VSiN when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Bebefe, Mike Palm, Mike Pritchard. Final segment for us here. Final Football Friday of 2023. Thanks for rolling along here on the ride all football season long. We'll be back, of course, to celebrate the new year next Friday. But I just want to point out this is the final one of the year 2023. And before we go forward, a pro tip that we were talking about earlier in the show, and this one we discussed it during the break here, is that at this point of the NFL season, late in the year, if you are getting into the awards betting, don't fight against the media narratives for these award races. Like, if the media is telling you something, these are the people who are voting on the award. These are people who decide if you cash your ticket or not. Instead of arguing against them, listen and maybe find out if you can go ahead and bet it. That's my advice for people who want to dabble into the awards race, especially late, like midway. You can kind of play against some of the narratives, but at this point in the season, minds start to get made up. Don't fight it. Just bet it.
How about that, Elliot? Fresh off the bench with narratives. Nice job here. You cleaned up what you were talking about in the break.
You give a guy some time off, and he's coming here throwing 98 over the plate.
Caesar was tremendous, I have to say.
Yeah, you like Caesar?
I enjoyed that. So that we have a deep bench.
How many people have you thrown shots at?
No shot. I'm trying to give a kid a compliment. Yeah. And you always on your think that I have ill intentions. I did not have ill intentions.
On your pro tip, family, let's put it to the test. So, like, say Lamar doesn't have a great game and they lose, even though the narrative is on Lamar Jackson right now for MVP. Or like, is it so strong that, it you know, if he has a subpar game, I mean, is that going to sway this situation for MVP in the National Football League?
I would be curious to see where, I mean, like, I'm not one of the people that's talking in the media. So yeah, I can only give my opinion on what they might say if Lamar played poorly. Mm-hmm. My guess is that the narrative would shift once again. I think we'd see another favorite that's minus 200 all of a sudden go down to like 8-1 or something like that. And then my guess is that Tua's price would be the one that gets the biggest change.
Okay.
If Miami's able to win the game, I don't know if that means they would vote for Tua, but I think his price would change for sure.
Josh Allen has an unbelievable game, though, all of a sudden.
I think it sets up a week 18 narrative.
Yeah.
If it's not just losing, right? It's Lamar has multiple turnovers.
Playing poorly as well.
Right. Yeah. He has to also play poorly. Right.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though, with Lamar, though, like, and like, if he loses and he has four touchdowns, like, yes, I think people would still vote for him. But even if they lose and he has an average game, because his numbers aren't like that great, especially compared to his previous MVP season. But I mean, he's not in the top 10 in passing yards, not in the top 10 in passing touchdowns. I think he's like eighth or ninth in QBR.
Right.
He's about 12th in EPA per play. Like, he's not had like a statistical MVP season. That even if they lose and he plays average, I think he kind of gets knocked off the perch there and somebody else can go ahead and take the award.
Okay. So that's my thought process in terms of, I know he's captured the narrative now.
For now.
But everything's been so
late,
fluid. Yeah.
Very, very,
very late. Very late too.
Purdy had the narrative last week.
Yeah. But so is, like, for instance, I don't know, Josh Allen. Like could Christian McCaffrey run for 200 yards against this Washington defense? You know, you wonder what happens to the narrative there again. So it gets very, very interesting, though, down the stretch here.
I thought that game was set up for McCaffrey to go off with all the intercepts. If they could have come back and won that game and he gets 150, that would have been the perfect scenario. Yeah. Like at halftime, I'm saying it's all set up. If you think now, bet him now at halftime. Yeah. But then they got too far behind. Yeah.
Turnovers. Yeah.
But it did. So the first half really set up for him because he had it like 80 yards rushing and a touchdown in the first half.
It was the exact run out that you wanted.
It's kind of set up for Josh Allen, too, though.
I mean, it is.
For them to go on this run.
How many interceptions does he have?
He leads the league.
Yeah. That's also a little bit of a hindrance.
Yeah. But he's also number two in QBR. Right. He's in the top three in EPA per play. Like, a lot of the advanced numbers, like, and those people that really put those numbers to, like, they love him. They love Josh Allen for MVP. So we'll see what happens here. The only thing I think I'm certain about with the MVP, I think that Purdy's just done. That's the only thing I would say, like, for sure. Other than that, I think every other scenario could come into play. But hey, that's where we sit. Speaking of that game, Lamar hosts the Miami Dolphins and his Baltimore Ravens. Right now, Baltimore, a 3-point favorite. There's some 3.5s as well in the market here where we're sitting at Circa. There's a 3.5. DraftKings has a 3.5. The total is 47. Do you guys like Baltimore in this spot? Seems like it's a tough spot coming off a short week here.
Yeah, how about an up teaser that the syndicate talks about? Mm-hmm. How about a 6.5-point teaser? Dolphins and Raiders up to 10. Mm-hmm. How about that?
Yeah, it's right up to syndicate's alley right there.
I like kind of like that. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the Ravens and everything they've done. This is a tough spot. I would never lay 3.5 and you can convince me maybe to lay 1.5 or 2. I think the Dolphins keep this close. I don't think the Dolphins played that great, but they were able to get that monkey off their back and beating a team with a winning record. And now, I mean, this is the 1-2 seed. This is the game for the bye, right? Yeah. So it's right there in front of them. I respect McDaniel a lot as a play caller. They present a lot of problems for any defense. And we'll see. Can the Ravens follow it up? Here's a trend stat. But sometimes the trend is your friend. But take this for what you want. Under Lamar Jackson, after coming off a straight-up win as an underdog, they're 0-8 against the spread. The Ravens. So,
I know that Miami's defense has improved. I think from a matchup standpoint, too, outside of Lamar Jackson breaking down plays, breaking down your defense, and being Lamar Jackson, that's what did San Francisco in big time. Can he do that again? Perhaps he could. I think Baltimore at this point would like to see him do that. But Miami, with a lot of team speed, I'd be curious to see how they feel about that. And then also the matchup situation that they have on the defense side of the ball, trying to limit the point output from Baltimore and see if that offense can get into rhythm and score some points. Tariq Hill is going to be a big part, big factor, no Waddle. So Tua is going to have his hands full too, though.
Oh, yeah.
That's why, more than one possession from a teaser standpoint appeals to a lot of people.
Doesn't this sort of feel like a lower scoring game? Like, I know it's like it's Miami, it's Baltimore, and like these quarterbacks, these offenses. But to me, when I hear everybody talk about this, it feels like we might get a lower scoring affair here because, I mean, factor in Jalen Waddle, he's already been ruled out with the high ankle sprain. I mean, we're probably not going to see him till the playoffs. We can break that news already if it's a high ankle. And then Baltimore coming off of that performance to where offensively it wasn't great. They were put up in pretty good positions with all the turnovers that their defense forced. This feels like under 47 could be the play here in this contest.
I'd have to look at it early.
Yeah.
Because I could also see a wide open game if it starts fast. So? It depends on how the game starts to me.
Yeah, a lot of big plays for Baltimore, obviously. And, Lamar is a big part of that. But those are they're not high percentage plays. Those are low percentage type of plays. And the consistency of that or you try to rely on stuff like that, that gets you in trouble.
Speaking of low percentage plays, how about that Kansas City Chiefs offense, huh? They're hosting Cincinnati here this week, and they're 6.5-point favorites. So this has come off of the key number of 7. We're now down to 6.5, total 44. I know from an injury standpoint, Legarius Sneed, he's popped up on the injury report here, the number one corner for Kansas City. If he doesn't play in this game and then the Bengals get Jamar Chase back, you can see kind of why we've kind of moved through that key number here. But is this a buy low spot here for Kansas City, or do you want nothing to do with what's going on there with the Chiefs offense?
I mean, if you want to make the argument for Cincinnati, they play here every year in the playoffs. I mean, these teams are very familiar for not being divisional foes.
Burrowhead.
You talk about the familiarity breeds close games, and you might want to take 6.5, but I won't have a play on this game.
No, no play yet. Jamar Chase is everything because I think with Jamar and T on the field, that offense is different. The offense for Browning's different. Zach Taylor is different. You think about a quarterback and how important they are to a situation. When you take one of those two guys off the field, it just changes things for Cincinnati from a philosophy standpoint. I'm not impressed with their defense. Kansas City, they just have a lot of problems. They don't have enough playmakers, consistent playmakers. And, Patrick's trying to do a lot on his own, whereas he can't do that. I mean, I think he's starting to realize that. So, I don't expect Kansas City kind of blow them away. I can't lay 6.5 now, but as it get closer to the game time, I think I'll make my decision whether or not I want to play it. But I have a lean towards Cincinnati.
Here's a question for the two of you to close the year out. If I gave you three teams, you get to pick any three teams, and I'm going to bet you $1,000 if one of those three teams wins the Super Bowl, which three teams are you taking? Which three teams?
Rich, you want to crack out first?
I have my answer.
You go first.
I would have 49ers, number one.
Yep.
Baltimore, two.
And who's three? That's the interesting question to me.
Buffalo.
Okay. Rich? I answered this with Tim yesterday.
San Francisco. I would go Baltimore.
Who's the third?
It's a great question. Yeah.
Because some will leave Baltimore out, right? Everybody's going to have San Francisco.
Yeah.
Some will leave Baltimore out.
I mean, I'm warming up to Cleveland a little bit.
Mine was Flacco for my Flacco. Answer is Chiefs. They still have the pedigree. They still have Mahomes. They still have Reed. Somebody got to beat them. They're the champs.
Chiefs offense versus
we all Cleveland agree Browns. Though we're singling San Francisco Chiefs, in the
Chiefs
NFC.
Chiefs offense versus the Cleveland Browns defense.
What's more likely, Chiefs one and done, or they get back to the Super Bowl? You may get back.
He'll
to the
give
Super
you
Bowl?
An answer next year.
Tune in next.
Back
Friday.
To the Super Bowl.
Back to the Super Bowl. There we go. That does it for us. Happy New Year, everybody. Sharp Money is coming up next year on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.